and Victor Ortiz was not able to get up from that knockout. It's legal, it's not classy, and it's officially a KO. But part of my response here is, frankly, if you're the best fighter in the world, and you like to claim that you're the best fighter in history, you shouldn't have to do that. That's no way to prove it.
You were in charge of the fight. You were aggressive, trying and taking advantage of what you saw.
You know what I'm going to do? Because you don't ever give me a fair shake. You know that? So I'm going to let you talk to Victor Ortiz, all right? I'm through. They put somebody else up and give me an interview.
What are you talking about?
You never give me a fair shake. HBO needs to fire you. You don't know shit about boxing. You ain't shit. You're not shit.
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
You won't do shit.
That was from last night's HBO boxing pay-per-view. Floyd Mayweather Jr., former WrestleMania headliner, going one-on-one with Victor Ortiz. That was Mayweather's, I believe, 26th knockout or something like that. 42 straight victories. He is undefeated, and a very controversial ending to that boxing fight. A lot of people who paid money to see that fight in HD on pay-per-view last night feeling very ripped off today. And then after the fight, the post-fight interview, Larry Merchant interviewing Floyd Mayweather, Mayweather going off on the 80-year-old boxing analyst who, quite frankly, in all honesty, he does kind of annoy me. He annoys everybody, Larry Merchant does. But he stood up for himself. Mayweather had some harsh words for him, and Merchant said that if he was 50 years younger, I cannot picture Larry Merchant 50 years younger, but he said if he was 50 years younger, he would kick Floyd Mayweather's ass. And instantly, that became the must-see pay-per-view fight for me. I would pay money. I would break my rule of not paying money for a boxing fight, and I would pay to see Floyd Mayweather one-on-one with Larry Merchant. You know, you could do the whole deal like the first Vince-Austin match where, you know, Austin had his hand tied behind his back. You know, you put some handicaps in there to give the guy an edge. I'd pay money to see that. But obviously, most people would pay money to see Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, and I guess Mayweather is, I guess, too afraid to fight him. Either that, or he's worried that Pacquiao is on the juice. I don't know what the deal is. All I know is that boxing is leaving millions upon millions of dollars on the table by not putting that fight together. And even as just a casual, at best, boxing fan, I could tell you that that's the only fight I would really have an interest in seeing. So, aside from the Larry Merchant fight, of course. This is Sound Off 179 on SEScoops.com. It is Sunday, September 18th, 2011, Night of Champions Sunday. WWE's big pay-per-view tonight from Buffalo. We'll do a quick run-through of the matches with some quick predictions right here for those of you who do manage to listen to this show before the pay-per-view tonight. Many of you, I'm sure, will not have that chance. But obviously the main event of the pay-per-view tonight, which is ironic because the name of the event is Night of Champions. And arguably the main event of this show is, in fact, not for a championship. It is Triple H putting his title of COO of WWE on the line. If he loses to CM Punk, he is no longer COO. He is forced to resign. And if Triple H wins, well, I guess he just gets bragging rights over Punk. There's really nothing else on the line. It is a no-disqualification match, Triple H versus Punk. It is not, in fact, their first match, as has been pointed out to me. They did have a match on SmackDown, which may have been their one and only singles match on TV back on January 29th, 2010, when Punk was walking around looking like a hobo with all that facial hair and body hair. He was leading the Straight Edge Society at the time. But for all intents and purposes, it does feel fresh. We haven't exactly seen too many Triple H Punk matches on TV. You don't need me to go into it again. Way too early for this match to be happening. They had a situation with Kevin Nash that, in their mind, necessitated them bumping this match up by a couple of months. I argue you could have come up with something else in the interim. It's way too early for Triple H to be wrestling, let alone putting his COO title on the line. He hasn't even been on the job for a full 2 months. This is going to be Triple H's second televised match in WWE in just the last 17 months. He has not wrestled very often on TV. Again, you may remember at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view in April of last year, Triple H, I don't remember if he won or lost. I think he lost that match to Sheamus, and then he got beaten up, and we didn't see Triple H at all. Certainly not in action for the remainder of the year. And his first match and his only match this year was against The Undertaker at WrestleMania 27. They had a hell of a match. And Triple H had a lot of time to heal up some nagging issues with his neck and his quads. So he should be good to go. I expect a really, really good match. You know, Punk is awesome. Triple H, when he, you know, turns the jets on, can be really, really good, even though he is 40 years old now. But he's had plenty of time off, and so he should be ready to go. As far as who wins this match, you know, it's way too early to think that Triple H would lose his position as COO, but it's not necessarily unrealistic to think that they could throw a storyline twist in here where he does. Perhaps Kevin Nash interferes in the match and either intentionally or inadvertently costs Triple H the match. They can build some more tension between the two of them. I was not of the impression that Nash would be there. Now I'm hearing otherwise. So my guess is that Kevin Nash somehow factors into the conclusion of this match. Triple H will beat CM Punk and retain his title as COO. And I'm not saying Triple H will finally go heel, although, as I understand it, that is ultimately the goal. Perhaps there's interference that Triple H does not condone. He's unaware of it, whatever the case may be. I'm going with Triple H in this match. I just hope that if he does win this match, it's not done in a way that just completely buries CM Punk. I'd like to think they're not that stupid, and Punk would certainly voice his concerns and speak up if that is what they booked for this match. But I'm going to go with Triple H. We got John Cena challenging Alberto Del Rio for the WWE Championship. The two actually had a match. I thought this was their first match again. It is not. The two of them actually had a match on Raw earlier this year, back on March 14th. On one of the shows leading up to WrestleMania 27, so this is not their first encounter. But again, it feels somewhat fresh. This feud is just not doing it for me. I think because they've gone to such great lengths to make Triple H and CM Punk feel like a real feud. You know, it's personal between the two of them, and they're out there every week shooting on each other. They're talking about how, you know, this guy's getting a push, or you only push bodybuilders, or, you know, they're using their real names, and that's all fine and good. But at the same time, you're trying to promote another feud for your main championship between two guys who, quite frankly, you know, they're not doing anything wrong, but it just feels too fake. You know, Del Rio's character, I love Del Rio's character. I love Ricardo, the whole package, you know, the cars. He's gotten, you know, the biggest push that anybody has gotten in the last couple of years. I mean, think about it. Del Rio made his debut just a little over a year ago. And in that time, in his debut match, he beat Rey Mysterio fair and square on SmackDown. He won the Royal Rumble. It took him many more months than originally it should have, but ultimately he did win the championship. In between, he won Money in the Bank. Here he is main eventing, defending against John Cena. But again, it's just not doing it for me. It feels too contrived. It doesn't feel... there's nothing to get excited about. And maybe it's just not even Alberto's fault. It's just John Cena against the flavor of the month. You know, we've seen this month after month after month. And I do not expect Cena to win the championship tonight. I expect Del Rio to win, or at the very least, he'll retain. You know, perhaps Cena wins by DQ and, you know, someone interferes. But my prediction is Del Rio walks out with the WWE title. The whole point of putting the belt on him in the first place, they have this tour of Mexico coming up in a couple of weeks. And they desperately wanted the belt on Del Rio before that tour. So for Cena to win the belt back tonight makes absolutely no sense. So my pick in this match is Del Rio. Randy Orton defending the World Heavyweight Championship against the world's strongest man, Mark Henry. And Mark Henry has done a tremendous job over the last couple of months, just building himself up as this monster heel, coming out there. He almost looks like a tortured, tormented soul. You know, whenever he does a promo, he has this look on his face like he's pained by something deep within. And that, of course, is the fact that he's been in this company now for 15 years. And in those 15 years, he feels as though he has been wronged. You know, he has not been given chances and opportunities like other people have, which is absolutely true. If you go back and add up the number of title shots, John Cena and Batista alone, if you go back over the last 5 or 6 years, the number of title matches those two guys have gotten is absolutely disgusting, quite frankly. And here you have Mark Henry, who's a monster of a man, not the greatest wrestler in the world. You know, again, I'm not expecting him and Orton to light the world on fire tonight the way that Orton and Christian have been doing over the last couple of months. But you know what? That feud is over. You go into this pay-per-view tonight not expecting a great wrestling match, and I expect it to be a fight. I'm not going in there expecting Mark Henry to do holds, except maybe a bear hug or something like that. Having said all of that, I think he deserves a run with the championship. I really do. I have absolutely no bias towards seeing Randy Orton keep the belt. Quite frankly, I don't really care for Orton holding the championship. It's the Cena syndrome on SmackDown. You know, he's had the title 10 times now. I believe Orton is now a 10-time champion. And they pass it around like candy. It seems like everybody else has already had a shot. Jack fucking Swagger, for crying out loud, had a run with the World Heavyweight Championship. There's no reason not to give Mark Henry the ball and let him run with it. Mark Henry, the idea of Mark Henry running is kind of funny, but he's done a great job with his character. You know, he's beaten people up. He's really, really pushed the fact that he is the world's strongest man. You know, I still remember when he picked up that stagehand on SmackDown, the audio engineer, and just tossed him. And the way it was shot, it was just perfect. He comes out there, you know, I'm going to talk about SmackDown a little bit later on. I love that final segment on Friday night. I thought they did a tremendous job with that whole pull-apart brawl. My only concern here is that Henry has left Orton laying now on both go-home shows to the pay-per-view. Orton was left laying on Raw. I think Henry beat him up with a steel chair. Orton was also left laying on SmackDown on Friday night. So, with Orton being laid out on both shows, I find it very hard to believe that they would just have Mark Henry beat him clean at the pay-per-view. As much as I really, really hope they give Henry a shot, I would love to see him win the championship. And I never thought I'd hear myself say that, but that's a testament to the job that they've done with him and the job that he's done with the character over the last couple of months. But, having said that, I do see Orton retaining the championship. That's my prediction for this match. Wouldn't shock me at all to see Kane and or Big Show make a return in this match. Of course, both men were put out by Mark Henry. They were injured and carried off and have not been seen since. Both guys were not actually injured. It was all part of the storyline. Kane, of course, was basically given the time to rest up his body from bumps and bruises, but it's not like either man was actually leaving to undergo surgery. They're ready to come back whenever WWE wants them to come back. And since I would hope they're not dumb enough to have Orton give Henry an RKO and pin him 1-2-3, one way they could kind of put Orton over without hurting Henry too much would be by having Kane and or Big Show make some sort of return in this match and cost him the championship. So that's my prediction for the match. Of course, if Henry does walk out with the title, I will gladly accept the fact that I was wrong. But I don't know. The way they booked it over the last week or so, I just don't see it happening. Not yet. Anyway, Cody Rhodes will defend the Intercontinental title against Ted DiBiase. This was the latest match added to the card. And, yeah, it's a mid-card feud. Nothing really special, to be honest. The way they've been pushing DiBiase, which, of course, they haven't been pushing DiBiase, makes it hard for me to predict the title win for him. They've been pushing Cody Rhodes as something special. And I see no reason for that to change. So I'll go with Cody Rhodes retaining the championship in this match. Air Boom, Kofi Kingston and Evan Bourne defending the WWE Tag Team titles against The Miz and R-Truth. And one would expect Miz and R-Truth to go over here, take the titles, unless they're planning on splitting them up already. But if they're going to keep the two of them together as a team for any length of time, I would say this is the place for them to win the championship. It's a step down for The Miz, of course. Here's a guy who was headlining WrestleMania just about 6 months ago or 8 months ago, whatever it was. Defending the WWE Championship. But right now, there's just no room for him in those two top programs. You know, you have Del Rio's the new champion. Cena now is trying to get the belt back from Del Rio, so Miz doesn't really fit in there. And Triple H and Punk have their own thing going. Of course, Rock and Cena is still on the back burner. That's coming up soon. Miz just doesn't have a real space in the main event scene right now, and that's okay. You know, it was inevitable that it would happen. But if they're going to continue to push him, that's a positive sign. The fact that he's not on a losing streak or something is encouraging to me. I would say Miz and R-Truth go over. I've been mostly entertained by their act. You know, sometimes the comedy is hit or miss, but for the most part, I've enjoyed what they've done with them. You know, Kingston and Bourne losing the belts, I mean, really, what's the big deal? It's not like they're pushing them as anything overly special anyway, so I'll go with Miz and R-Truth winning the championship. Then we have a fatal four-way for the United States Championship. Dolph Ziggler defending against Jack Swagger, John Morrison, and Alex Riley. This is probably the match on the show, aside maybe from Cody and Ted, that I really could care less about. This whole storyline with Dolph and Swagger and Vicky, for me, is just falling completely flat. I could not care any less about it. And the United States Championship, of course, is not really promoted as anything special. As far as who goes over in this match, you know, four guys, it could be anybody. If they took the title off Ziggler, it wouldn't shock me if maybe Swagger somehow had something to do with costing him the belt, so maybe Morrison walks out with the U.S. title. It's entirely possible, but I'll just go ahead and predict that Ziggler retains the title in this match. And then we have Kelly Kelly defending the Divas Championship against Beth Phoenix. I'd like to see Beth win the title in her hometown, quite frankly, just like Punk did at Money in the Bank. It was actually 5 years ago, this very month, at Unforgiven in Toronto, that Trish Stratus beat Lita to win the Women's Championship, and then she retired as the champion. And this was in Trish's hometown. So while WWE's track record of putting people over in their hometown is not exactly stellar, there are certain examples of them doing it before, including this very month 5 years ago with the women's title. So hopefully Beth can get a big win tonight in Buffalo. And that's the card. Unless they add something last minute, all the championships are on the line, plus Punk and Triple H, the real main event of the show. If you check out Night of Champions, send your feedback in when the show is over. I'd love to hear from you. I think the show will do better than last year. Off the top of my head, I don't even remember any of the matches at Night of Champions last year, which says everything that needs to be said about how impactful that show was. So this show should do a little bit better than that, but they're leaving a lot of business on the table, in my opinion, by not waiting, at least until maybe Survivor Series or even WrestleMania. And, WrestleMania probably is too long to wait, but they're leaving money on the table by not holding off on this initial Triple H Punk match for a couple more months. But they felt they had no other choice, so we get it tonight, and hopefully those two guys can deliver. Punk's in the match. Triple H is on his A-game. Triple H doesn't want to go out there and stink out the joint. And he had a great match with Undertaker at WrestleMania. So aside from whatever the crap screwjob finish no doubt will be, I'm sure the two of them are going to have a hell of a match. Let's talk about some breaking news here concerning the Survivor Series in November. Now, I talked about on the show a few weeks ago, during Raw here in the New York market, they aired a commercial for Survivor Series tickets going on sale. And the commercial did not outright say that Rock would be wrestling, but the language they used made it very clear that Rock perhaps would, in fact, be making his in-ring return on this show. They voiced it over basically saying that for the first time in 8 years, the People's Champ returns to action. And just the words they used would lead anyone with common sense to believe that The Rock would be wrestling on the show. But again, it was never confirmed. And it really sounded still somewhat far-fetched. You know, they've been building The Rock's big comeback for WrestleMania next year. Rock vs. Cena, the big WrestleMania main event in his hometown of Miami. And Rock has not had a formal match since WrestleMania 20, back in March of 2004, ironically at Madison Square Garden, the location of this year's Survivor Series pay-per-view. So there was a lot of speculation. Is he going to wrestle? Is he not going to wrestle? And I talked on this show last week about what I could see WWE doing, whether it's Team Rock against Team Cena, or, quite possibly, putting them on the same team. I did say that. As a matter of fact, I want to play a little clip here from episode 178 last week of the Sound Off as I talked about Rock possibly wrestling at Survivor Series. One thing I could see WWE doing, which I pray does not happen, I'd much rather have Rock not wrestle if this is what they're going to do, and they do this all the time, is take two guys who don't like each other, take two guys who are ready to go head-to-head in a singles match, and make them unwilling tag team partners. I could easily see them putting Rock and Cena on the same Survivor Series team as partners. And I'm sure they would build tension between them, but I am so over the concept of putting unwilling partners together as a team. I don't ever have to see that again. There you go. That's what I said last week. And sure enough, this week The Rock put a picture out on his Facebook page, a Survivor Series pay-per-view poster that has Rock and John Cena on the poster with the tagline underneath, "Never before, never again, November 20th, 2011, basically saying the two of them are going to be teaming up as tag team partners. And WWE.com came out on Friday and basically just confirmed it. There's no angle to build to it or anything. Survivor Series is still 2 months away. And WWE.com went on and said that there will, in fact, be a 5-on-5 traditional Survivor Series elimination match. And The Rock will be teaming with John Cena. They will not be adversaries. They will be on the same team. And you heard what I said last week. This was not the idea that I would have gone with. I said last week that if they were going to do that, I'd almost rather Rock not wrestle on the show. And I'm only going to take that back because I have tickets to the Survivor Series. I will be in attendance on the 20th of November at Madison Square Garden. And I got to tell you, the fact that it's been confirmed that Rock is in fact going to wrestle on this show has me very excited. You know, I'm going to be there live in Madison Square Garden to witness The Rock's first wrestling match since WrestleMania 20. So selfishly, I actually like the idea. Now, of course, if you remove the selfish aspect of it, pretend I wasn't going to be there, I'm not a big fan of this idea. When Rock did that YouTube video, go back a couple of months when Rock was filming that video in the mountains somewhere. I don't know where he was. I guess he was at his home. And he did that video talking about why the men don't like John Cena. And everything The Rock said in that video was true. This was the same video that CM Punk played footage of on Raw prior to SummerSlam in his match with John Cena. And, you know, The Rock said that, you know, people can smell a phony punk from a mile away, this and that. And that was in that video he said that, again, alluded to the fact that he would be coming to Survivor Series. He was not going to wait until WrestleMania. And you would watch that video and think, huh, Rock may not wrestle, but he's going to be at Survivor Series. He threatened to kick John Cena's ass. So if you look at it like that, it doesn't make any sense at all that Rock would come to Survivor Series and instead of kicking John Cena's ass, which I'm sure he still will do, I'm sure the two of them will either come to blows and be separated, or The Rock will give him another Rock Bottom, or maybe Cena. You know, instead of Rock leaving Cena laying as he did at WrestleMania, perhaps Cena will jump the gun and give him an attitude adjustment or something. I'm sure they will do something like that to build their match at WrestleMania. At least I hope they will. But it doesn't make any sense if they're going to be on the same team. And yet Rock has been talking about kicking his ass. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they explain this. Was this something that the COO, Triple H, decreed? Was this a decision that the anonymous Raw GM, who I guess is still around, even though we never hear from him, how did this come to be? Who made this decision 2 months in advance that Rock and Cena, mortal enemies who are facing off at WrestleMania next year, would be tag team partners? I'll be curious to find out about that. Not a fan of this idea at all. I'm really not. And if they wanted Rock to come back and wrestle, and they desperately wanted him to, obviously that was not the original plan, because like I said, Rock's YouTube video makes no sense. And I don't know if it's because they originally planned to have Triple H and CM Punk at Survivor Series. And Kevin Nash, you know, the issue with him supposedly was a medical issue that wasn't overly serious. It may be cleared up in the next month or so, but it was serious enough that they had to change all of their planning. You know, the Punk-Nash match for the pay-per-view tonight went out the window. They had to bump the Triple H match up a couple of months. They were banking on that as being one of the feature attractions at Survivor Series, and perhaps they freaked. My guess is they freaked. And when the Kevin Nash thing happened and they had to bump this match up a couple of months, they got very, very desperate. And they basically said, look, we've got Rock locked in for the pay-per-view. He's going to be there. He's going to make an appearance. He'll probably do something physical, but we need more than that. And they convinced Rock to actually wrestle a match and bump his return up. Again, his first match in 8 years or 8.5 years at that point, whatever it's going to be. So in a way, you can kind of say that Kevin Nash kind of is the reason that Rock is going to be wrestling a couple of months before WrestleMania. So what happens now? You know, who do they face? How does this work? I'm sure their partners, they'll flesh the team out with people like Morrison. I was going to say Riley, but I would hope not. And we don't even know if there'll be SmackDown guys. You know, perhaps it'll be a mix of Raw and SmackDown. In fact, I'm almost sure it probably will be. You can see Randy Orton being on that team too. Although, if you put all your top stars in this one match, what the hell are you going to put on the show elsewhere? You know, you figure you've got to have a title match somewhere on the card. I could see Rock and Cena with three other guys facing off with, let's say, Del Rio, Miz, and R-Truth. I could see that for sure. I thought maybe at first, when I heard about it, maybe they would try to work Punk and Triple H in there and do the same thing where they make the two of them unwilling partners and you get Punk and Triple H in a match against Rock and Cena. That actually would be a hell of a tag match. But it's a traditional 5-on-5. You know, and I like that aspect of it. You know, I do miss the old Survivor Series matches, although an entire card of nothing but those 5-on-5 matches cannot work in 2011. You need more than that. Although Rock being in that match, that may go a long way. Obviously, the show is going to do a lot better than Survivor Series probably has done in the last couple of years. And if Rock wrestling his first match does not bump that buy rate up by at least 150,000 buys, I don't know what to say. you know, Survivor Series traditionally was one of the big four pay-per-views. And it really has not been a big four show for many, many years now. In fact, it was doing so poorly that last year, the year before, Vince McMahon basically killed the Survivor Series. We're not even supposed to be having a Survivor Series right now. But Vince got talked out of it. They convinced him that it was a combination of their piss-poor build-up to the title match that year. That was the year that they built up the Shawn Michaels, Triple H, John Cena match for the championship. And they built that match up on comedy, okay, with Hornswoggle. And that, coupled with the fact that the pay-per-view came on the same weekend as a UFC show, no shit Survivor Series was going to do poorly. And then Vince overreacted. They talked him out of it. So for now, Survivor Series is back. But, you know, Rock wrestling is not the thing I have a problem with. I may have mentioned that last week. If they play their cards right, they can do it in such a way where it actually enhances the build to Rock Cena at WrestleMania next year. I wouldn't have Rock wrestling half the match. You know, I wouldn't have him even start the match. I would have him out on the apron. The crowd is chanting his name, going crazy. They're just begging for him to tag into the match. He gets the hot tag at some point, comes in, maybe gets beaten down, tags in Cena. He comes in. Maybe Rock gets tagged in one more time during the course of the match. I don't want to give too much of him away, because I do think it takes something away from WrestleMania. But it's okay, because they've been building WrestleMania up as Rock versus Cena. They haven't necessarily been building WrestleMania up as his first match in 9 years. Okay, so it's fine if he wrestles on this show. But as I said in that clip from last week, you know, I've seen this over and over and over again, the unwilling partners bit. Because I'm sure Rock didn't ask, you know, in storyline, to be John Cena's tag team partner at Survivor Series, which, again, is going to be very curious to see how they explain this whole thing. But I've seen this so many times before in the build-up to WrestleMania, in the build-up to other shows. Let's take two guys who are facing off or two guys who hate each other's guts, and let's make them tag team partners. And I know one of the other reasons they're probably doing this is because they're afraid that John Cena at the Garden is going to get booed out of the building, which he absolutely is. There's nothing you can do about that. You know, even if Rock wasn't on the show, John Cena is going to walk into Madison Square Garden and get booed, okay? Let me take you back to a show that I was actually there for live in attendance. I was at MSG for the Royal Rumble in 2008. Okay, so the Cena hate was running strong even then. And Cena came out. He was the surprise entrant, number 30 in the Royal Rumble, the match that he ended up winning. When his music hit, he was a surprise entrant. People thought he was hurt. He was recovering from a torn pec. Nobody expected him back this early. And his music hit, and the place went crazy. You know, everybody went nuts. It was a big surprise. You know, people get excited when you surprise them, and it was a genuine surprise. I tipped my cap at the time to WWE for actually being able to do something that didn't leak out on the internet in advance. And people went crazy. You know, when Cena came out, they went nuts. And then you'll notice that when Cena got into the ring, all of a sudden, all those cheers disappeared, and he got showered by boos. In fact, he was booed right up until the point in the match that he won. And he had his fans, you know, he had the kids and the women and all that, but at some point, all the men that were cheering realized, holy shit, why am I cheering this guy? I hate his guts. And they started booing him. And this was his big comeback, coming back from an injury. He was out for a couple of months, okay? That was then. Things really haven't changed in the last couple of years. And you're talking about a New York crowd, New York, much like Philly and Chicago and other places, their fans, you know, in New York at the Garden cheer who they want to cheer for. It's a very, interesting crowd. And I guarantee you'll never hear Vince McMahon call the New York crowd Bizarro or Bizarro Land, because it's not Canada, but it's the exact same thing. So they can do anything they want to, okay? You can take Mahatma Gandhi, okay, and bring him down to the ring as John Cena's tag team partner. It's not going to get Cena cheered anymore. They did the same thing on Raw last week with Bret Hart. You know, Bret Hart came out at the beginning of the show in Canada, got a huge reaction from the crowd. Just huge. Of course, it was Ottawa. It was Canada. Okay, he's a hero up there. And then later on in the show, what did they do? They had Bret come out with John Cena. I think they played Cena's music. They had them come out together as a team. Why do you think they did that? The reason they did that was because they were hoping that it would get Cena some cheers from the crowd. Instead, what happened is that both guys got a lukewarm response. Bret came out. It seemed like people didn't care. When an hour earlier, they were going nuts for him. They tried it, and it didn't work. Just like it's not going to work at Survivor Series. So if they're trying to put the two of them together as a team so that Cena will get cheered, they'll be the two big baby faces and the crowd's going crazy for them, it's not going to work. So if that's the idea behind this, it's already a fail. So I don't know. I mean, like I said, I was hoping this wouldn't be the idea. It is the idea. What are you going to do? This, you know, it is what it is. People are going to buy the pay-per-view to see The Rock. It's a smart move to get him on the show in a match. And I'm going to be there live. Okay, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't excited to be seeing The Rock wrestle. It's going to be special to see him wrestling his first match in 8 years. But, god damn, I have no interest in seeing the two of them as tag team partners. I just don't. I think they're really dropping the ball. I said last week, I don't want to see the two of them have a match before WrestleMania, but you could work it where they're on opposite teams. You know, Rock says, listen, I told you I wasn't waiting until WrestleMania. I said I was coming to the Garden where I made my debut at the Survivor Series in 1996, and I'm coming to kick your ass. You know, Rock talks about on Twitter all the time, boots to asses, right? I'm going to put my boot up your ass. And I don't know how they would work it in terms of a Survivor Series match, just because you'd have to have heels in there, unless it's some sort of wild card match. And they've only had one wild card match officially in Survivor Series history. That was back in 95, and we never saw another one again. That's basically a match where you have teams that it's a mixture of heels and babyfaces. There's really no rhyme or reason behind it. A wild card match could work. You know, I could see them doing that as a way to get Rock and Cena on opposite teams. And people would get behind that. Oh, my. Absolutely. People would love Team Rock versus Team Cena. Absolutely. And we know Team Cena would go into this match as the heels. But you build that up and you just tease that first confrontation between the two of them. And you know, you don't deliver it right away. And ultimately, the two of them end up coming to blows, but very, very briefly. You know, then somebody tags themselves in or it gets broken up or something. There's a way that you could do it. People would pay a lot more money to see that. To see Rock and Cena as tag team partners, they'll still probably pay to see The Rock, but I really wish they would have gone with something else. But one thing is for sure, it's going to blow the roof off the place. And I very much look forward to being there in attendance to see that. It's going to be a fun night in New York City. Got a couple of TV shows to review. I actually caught Raw, part of SmackDown, and I caught part of Impact, and that's going to be the sad part of this report. We'll get to that in a little bit. Let's talk about Raw first. Let's run through this. This was a show from Ottawa. I referenced this show a little bit earlier on, north of the border. Welcome to Bizarro Land. That was the story of Raw Monday night. They were in Ottawa, Canada, and it did not take very long to get our first Bizarro Land reference. In fact, I'm pretty sure it came in the first 3 minutes of this show. And this was the go-home show before Night of Champions, and to me, it was just kind of there. You know, I didn't hate it like I did last week. I hated that show last week. I didn't hate this show, but I didn't really think it was any good either. It was largely boring and uneventful until the last couple of minutes, I will say that. They did feature the people who were on the pay-per-view, and they pushed each of those matches as they should have. But you know, when it was over, CM Punk vs. Triple H was the only match that I had any real interest in seeing, and it's still not enough to make me pay $44.95 tonight to see it. There was a lot of comedy on this show, too, that frankly I didn't really understand. All the ninja please nonsense with R-Truth, you know, I don't get that. And the stupid backstage segment with Ricardo Rodriguez drinking something that he told Alberto was an aphrodisiac. I think I know why they may have scripted that line for him. But if I'm wrong, I don't want to mention it here, and I don't want to mention it here and get the guy in trouble. But if it doesn't have anything to do with what I'm thinking, why would Ricardo want to take one of those before his match? Just, I don't know, it's just, maybe I'm the only one who asked that question, but better yet, maybe I don't want to know. Let's talk about the good. We'll do the good, the bad, and the ugly here. I've said before that I'm totally fine with Mark Henry getting a run with the championship. I said it earlier. You know, he's getting the biggest push of his career. It's also the longest stretch of his career, I believe, where he's been able to stay injury-free. You know, with Mark Henry, I keep worrying that, oh, this guy's going to tear something, or he's going to, you know. I think he was on a Saturday night's main event show a couple years ago, and there was a big six-man tag or eight-man tag on the show that involved Cena and, I think, Ray and a bunch of other guys. And I remember Mark Henry, I think, fell. I don't remember exactly what happened. It was some move in the corner. he came into the corner. Maybe he was executing a move. I don't know what happened, but I think something happened with his kneecap. He suffered an injury, and I remember at the time thinking, "My God, this guy is cursed." Just it's time to hang it up. You know, Mark's getting older. He just would get injured and injured and injured. And I haven't heard about a Mark Henry injury in a while. You know, knock on wood, I hope it stays that way. The guy's been injury-free. And his promo on Monday night, which I had a lot of people email me and ask me my thoughts, what'd you think of his promo? I thought it was really good stuff. And even though he's supposed to be a monster heel, it makes me want to root for the guy, you know, and hope that he finally reaches that brass ring, ignoring the ECW title reign he had. But let's be real. I mean, Matt Hardy and Ezekiel Jackson were also ECW champs, so that title really doesn't count. I'm going to put the Triple H CM Punk face-off in the good category in this review and the bad category because, on the whole, I enjoyed it. I thought both guys held their own, but there was plenty to dislike about it. For starters, I'm not really a fan of having talking as your main event. You know, especially if I would have paid for a ticket to attend the show in person. Secondly, the back and forth went on for far too long, and you can tell because they started repeating the same points over and over again, especially about how it's the fans that dictate who gets pushed in WWE. It's not the company, it's the fans. And, of course, that's only partially true. You know, that's mostly a bullshit statement. But after a while, I was tired of hearing about pushes. You know, how they only push bodybuilders and, you know, you didn't push me enough. And, well, you didn't deserve to be pushed. You know, this shit belongs behind the curtain, not on camera. You know, it was shocking at first the way they started breaking the fourth wall. And now we're seeing exactly what I talked about when I was asked by one of our listeners if I thought that we should start seeing other wrestlers cut shoot promos like CM Punk. I said absolutely not. Because the minute everyone begins copying Punk, it's no longer shocking or special. Well, you know, here we have the same people doing the same promos, but it no longer feels special the way it did back in July, now does it? Third point I want to make here, why is CM Punk saying that he respects Triple H for firing Kevin Nash? I thought he said that he didn't believe a word of it, and he thought the two of them were still in cahoots. But apparently now he feels differently. I guess he changed his mind. Anyway, all of that said, I did enjoy Punk's reference to the Survivor Series in Philadelphia back in 2006. That was when he teamed with DX and the Hardys, ironically, and got the biggest pop out of anybody in that match. In fact, I remember Triple H putting his arm around Punk in the ring as he was getting ready to do his Are You Ready shtick that, you know, DX used to do. And they should have queued up footage of that. I'm not sure why they didn't. You know, during I said earlier that during one of the segments with Punk and Cena before SummerSlam, Punk had footage of Rock's YouTube video ready to go on the Titantron. So, you know, they could have showed that footage from Survivor Series in 06. They could have showed that here. I'm not sure why they didn't. This all built to the big climax where Punk said that this isn't about CM Punk against Triple H. It's about Phil Brooks and Paul Levesque. You know, ooh, they're using real names now. You know, now we're shooting. And at this point, Punk's mic cut off. Triple H handed him his mic, which also got cut off. He then handed Punk a third mic, and Punk grabbed it and proceeded to smash Triple H right in the head with it and walked off. The lines are blurred on who's really the babyface and who's really the heel, but the crowd reacted very well to this for the most part. You know, unlike that contract signing segment they had in Wichita on SmackDown a couple of weeks ago, which just died a death. This was the opposite. The people were really into this. And, you know, I guess the new mystery now is who shut off Punk's microphone. You know, was it Johnny Ace? Was it Stephanie McMahon? You know, here's an idea. Maybe it was Kevin Dunn in the production truck, and they're going to introduce Kevin Dunn as the next new character as part of this storyline. Wouldn't that be something? They can call him the Beaver, because if you've ever seen a picture of the guy, and it's hard to find many photos of him online, though they do exist. The guy looks like a beaver, you know? Maybe he could use the log roll as his finishing maneuver. Anyway, let's get to the bad. That was it. That was the only good I had listed for this show, the bad stuff. It's always nice to see Bret Hart. You know, it really is. I like the Hitman, but this was not one of his best nights. You know, he was pretty well awful on the microphone, enough where I really felt bad for the guy. You know, he had a stroke, so that's to be expected. He's not going to be you know, as good as he used to be on promos, but it's not as though Bret was some great promo even back in his prime. You know, I don't understand. You know, people, I think, like to think of Bret Hart as he used to be this great promo guy. Bret's best promo work came during the U.S. versus Canada feud in 1997. He had some great promos that year. Okay, he really did. But if you look at the body of his work, okay, over his singles career, Bret Hart really wasn't that good of an interview. He never really was that good on the microphone. And, you know, he's gotten older. He had the stroke and other issues. And I don't understand why they keep scripting these drawn-out monologues for him when he constantly loses his train of thought and stammers over himself. I just don't get it. But, you know, the crowd in Canada did react to him like a big deal. I did get a kick out of it when he referred to the WWE title as a championship belt. I'm sure Vince was having a conniption fit backstage when that happened. The John Cena-Alberto Del Rio feud. I said earlier in the show, it's not doing anything for me. It shouldn't be the case. It is a fresh opponent for Cena. But yet, you watch them in the ring in that opening segment on Monday, and it just did not feel like a WWE title feud at all. You know, it felt like an undercard feud with an outcome that we can see coming from a mile away. I don't expect Cena to win the championship tonight, but you kind of resign yourself to what the ultimate outcome is going to be, which, of course, is Cena getting the belt back. You know, we had Cena, of course, doing comedy on the show. You know, every time he makes his entrance now, the one where he looks like a little kid at recess, I think of Jerry Seinfeld going out before Kenny Banya on one of the Seinfeld episodes to throw his comedy set. On this particular episode, Kenny Banya is another comedian who Jerry does not really like all that much. He's kind of annoying. And in this episode, his whole thing is Banya is riding on my coattails. You know, he's going on and doing his sets after me. So I'm going out there and I'm killing it. So then he's going out there and doing really well because I'm doing really well. So in this episode, he decides I'm going to throw the set so I can fuck with Banya. And in this episode, in the scene I'm thinking of, you know, Jerry walks out on stage. You don't see him. This is off camera. Kramer is watching from the curtain. And Jerry just walks out on stage, and in the cheesiest possible way, he says to the audience, "Hey, everybody, who's ready to laugh?" That's exactly how he said it. And this is exactly what I think of now every time John Cena walks out onto that stage, you know? And this is the face of the company. This is the guy that we're supposed to take seriously as the WWE champion. And every time he comes out, I think of that Seinfeld scene, and that just shouldn't be. Randy Orton and Cody Rhodes had a fine match on Raw Monday night. Nothing special, but that finish just absolutely killed it for me. Cody nailed Orton with his mask. He took his mask off, his protective mask, hit him with it, and then he went to give Orton the Crossroads, which is his finisher, and he completely fucked up the finish. I mean, I hate this maneuver to begin with because it's just way too clunky and unrealistic. I hated it when Test used to use it, and he used to call it the roll of the dice, and I hate it now. But my God, was this terrible. And what's worse is that he beat the World Heavyweight Champion with a move that clearly never connected. You know, I guess it's, you know, it's live TV, unlike SmackDown, so it would have been weird for them to just kind of do it over again, but that finish just killed it for me. And you know what? It's not their fault. Sometimes finishes get fucked up, but it's hard when you're getting a big pinfall win over the World Heavyweight Champion. Randy Orton is a lot like Cena in how unbeatable he is. I can't remember the last person who cleanly beat Randy Orton. And, you know, Cody hit him with the mask, but nails his finisher, completely fucks it up. And that's all I could think about as the referee dropped down for the pinfall, so it just ruined the whole thing for me. Let's see. This week, we had Jerry Lawler picking Sheamus as his mystery tag team partner against Joe Hennig and David Otunga before the match. While arguing their case as to why they do, in fact, have charisma, Hennig said that his father had charisma. So I guess we're supposed to think that charisma is genetic now, and was therefore passed down to him by way of the perfect sperm. And we had David Otunga say that he was a Harvard graduate and a former lawyer, so I guess that makes him charismatic too. So if he were in court arguing this before a judge, he would be overruled and held in contempt for making a mockery of the legal system. Anyway, they lost again. Way to make a star. My other question on this show, where the hell was Zack Ryder? You know, apparently he was wrestling Drew McIntyre in a dark match before the show. I didn't want to see him as Lawler's mystery partner again just because they did that last week, and they won in like a minute, so You know, you couldn't, you know, what more is there to do? You already did the match. They beat them in a minute. It's done. It's over with. But you couldn't find another role for him on this show. Really? You put together this great video package for the guy last week, over 2 minutes long. You gave him some momentum with a victory, and then he doesn't even appear on the show the very next week. I mean, I'll give them a slight pass since it was the go-home show, and Ryder doesn't have a match on the pay-per-view, but when you're trying to build a guy, okay, it's imperative that he makes it onto the show every week. Unless, of course, I was right on episode 178 last week when I said that they really weren't building him at all, and it was only going to last 1 week, in which case, I guess I was right again. And last but not least, the ugly part of the show, Kelly Kelly, the Divas Champion, beat Vicky Guerrero by rolling her up after a distraction. That's right, the champion needed a distraction to beat Vicky Guerrero. And I'd complain about the horrific bulldog attempt in this match. Talk about botched moves, but Vicky isn't a wrestler, so I'll give her a pass. Quite frankly, neither is Kelly, let's be honest. The other ugly thing about the show was the rating. Got a 2.7 Nielsen rating, which is a terrible number, especially for a go-home show before a pay-per-view. Monday Night Football always shaves a couple of tenths of a point off the Raw rating every year, but you know, it wasn't like the games on Monday night did monster numbers or anything like that. More concerning is that it was the lowest number for a non-holiday edition of Monday Night Raw dating back to December 15th, 1997. So to put this in perspective, Bret Hart made his WCW debut on Nitro that night. For even more perspective, if you want to go back to a time when Raw had no other wrestling competition, just as they don't today on Monday nights, you'd have to go all the way back to July 3rd, 1995. That was the last time Raw did a 2.7 for a non-holiday show, okay? 1995. And I don't know how many of you were fans in 95. I know some of you were. I was. I don't know why. I don't think I've ever come as close as I did in 1995, especially the early part of 95, to just throwing my hands up in the air and saying, fuck this, I am done. That was a horrible year to be a wrestling fan. Horrible. Anyway, this was just a poor show, and do you know why it was a poor show? Because the job of this show was to convince me, the viewer, okay, the customer, as they did successfully in July with Money in the Bank, convince me to part with my money, and they failed miserably in their objective. So, well, they already have my money for Survivor Series, so I'm sure they really don't give a shit. That leads into SmackDown on Friday night. It was Edge Appreciation Night. This poor guy, he's done a bunch of interviews recently talking about, you know, putting wrestling behind him. He can't wrestle anymore. You know, the guy, clearly he's not over that yet. It was a shock to him. He was not expecting to, you know, have to end his career as abruptly as he did. And he wanted to go out on better terms, and he wasn't able to do that. And I'm sure him being around wrestling and being at SummerSlam and at the shows and everything, it probably makes him feel badly, even if he doesn't want to admit it. I mean, he has admitted that he doesn't watch it on TV. He's just not ready to do that. And he said that at SummerSlam, when he made that appearance before the Christian-Randy Orton match, he said, if that was the last time I heard my music, that would be okay. He wants to get away from the Edge name. He wants to be Adam now. He doesn't want to be Edge. And yet, they pulled him back in for Edge Appreciation Night. Apparently, he's going to be back on SmackDown again in a couple of weeks. He may actually be at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, which means they may be putting him in some sort of angle, possibly involving Christian. They won't let the poor guy go. And they're going to want him back in a couple of months, I'm sure, because I believe he's got a WWE film that he worked on that's going to be coming out, I think, in January, last time I heard. So they're going to want him, I'm sure, on TV to help promote it. So we're going to see. We're not going to be seeing the end of Edge anytime soon. But this was Edge Appreciation Night. They were in Canada, and basically he hosted a Cutting Edge segment in the main event involving Randy Orton and Mark Henry. That really, if you didn't see the segment, it's worth going out of your way to see. Orton was his usual self. Orton is way too robotic in his delivery, but he had a couple of good lines. He had one line in particular, I think. I don't remember if it was actually Orton or Edge. I think it was Orton who made the comment about, you know, 400 pounds, 15 years, world's strongest disappointment, or something like that. I thought that was a really good line. Mark Henry was, again, great in his role. He does a really good job of kind of wearing his emotions on his sleeve, although he doesn't have any sleeves. But if he did have sleeves, he would be wearing his emotions on them. and letting everybody know that he's been in this company for 15 years. You know, he's seen people come and go, and he thinks this is his time. It's his time to be the world heavyweight champion. And there had been a rule that was put in place earlier in the show where the two of them could not touch until the Cutting Edge was over. So, of course, Edge exits the ring and says, well, now the Cutting Edge is over. So the two of them start going at it. They send a bunch of jobbers down to the ring, and they did this great pull-apart brawl, basically, where, you know, Orton would be held back, and then he would break free, and then Mark Henry kind of just threw everybody aside. He parted the Red Sea, if you will, and went right back after Orton. And the way this ended, he left Orton laying. He gave him, I think, two World's Strongest Slams, a couple of big splashes, and the final image of the show was Mark Henry standing tall with the World Heavyweight Championship held high in the air, which, again, leads me to believe he's not winning the title tonight, but a great way to end SmackDown. And I tell you what, I'm sure it's not going to be a great match, but if I were buying this pay-per-view tonight, if I were watching Night of Champions, I would be looking forward to this match a hell of a lot more than John Cena and Alberto Del Rio. To me, this is the championship match that has the most intrigue tonight on that show. Can Mark Henry do it? Can he finally break free from the chains and become World Heavyweight Champion for the first time in history? To me, it's a good story. May not be a good match, but it's a good story. And I really like what they've been doing here. The other big thing on this show, we had Sin Cara taking on Daniel Bryan, who actually won a match. Lost in all of this stuff about this storyline is the fact that Daniel Bryan, albeit by DQ, he did win a match finally on SmackDown Friday night. This led to the original Sin Cara, Mystico, coming out. And the two guys were in the ring. They circled each other. They kind of glared at each other. So we've got Mystico Cara now to feud with Junico Cara. And one interesting thing, Mystico actually spoke with a Spanish publication called Nexos Latinos for an interview last week regarding his wrestling background. And when he was asked why he wears a mask, he said that the mask adds a certain mystique to my image. It makes people wonder who I really am and gives additional interest to Mystico. And then he said that it's difficult for him to see through the mask because he can't see half the time. And I just read that and I laughed. I thought to myself, poor bastard. He can hardly see through the mask, and they turn down the lights during his matches. So maybe they'll tie his ankles together next so he can't do any high-flying moves. Then when he botches them, they'll turn around and say that he doesn't know how to work. So anyway, we've got Sin Cara versus Sin Cara coming up, although I don't think that match is going to be added to the pay-per-view tonight. If they added that match tonight, then I just don't know what to say. After the taping was over, they brought Edge back out. Trish Stratus was there. Bret Hart was there. They played a video on Edge's career that apparently was really awesome. Christian came out. Rhino came out. Of course, Rhino was good friends with Edge and Christian going back many, many years. And last time we saw Rhino was in TNA, although Rhino did appear, I believe, on the Ring of Honor iPay-per-view show this weekend as well. So he was there, and Sweet Daddy Siki was there. I believe he may have helped train Edge. I know this guy Ron Hutchinson was there. He trained Edge, but Sweet Daddy Siki is somebody else who was a popular name, I believe, up in the Canadian area back in the day. And Bret Hart actually talks fondly about him, so he was there. And a couple of other friends, I think Edge's mom was there. Bret Hart got on the mic and said that Edge was the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. And the entire locker room came out to pay tribute to Edge. He did one final 5-second pose with Christian for the benefit of those with flash photography. And apparently this was all filmed, and if it isn't on the website right now, I haven't checked, I'm sure it'll be included in a DVD release at some point. So there you go. We're going to be back in about 30 seconds right after this very special public service announcement. We've got some Impact thoughts to talk about, thoughts on Hulk Hogan's Micro Championship Wrestling, some other news and notes, and take your questions from the mailbag. A lot more to come. You are listening to the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. The following public service announcement has been paid for by wrestling fans concerned that wrestlers may run them off the road.
Drugs are bad. You shouldn't do drugs. If you do them, you're bad. Because drugs are bad, okay? It's a bad thing to do drugs, so don't be bad. By doing drugs, okay, that'd be bad. Drugs are bad.
We're back here. Time to talk some TNA, some Impact Wrestling from Thursday night, the big show that was built around the very first Sting-Ric Flair encounter in more than 10 years. Last time these two guys had a match was on the very last edition of WCW Monday Nitro back in March of 2001. And That match on Nitro back in 01 was, until now, my least favorite of all of the Sting-Ric Flair battles going all the way back to 1988. Flair had a weird haircut back then, and he had no confidence, which is why he wore a t-shirt during the match. He went through this period where he really just lost confidence in himself. He wasn't the nature boy. You know, he was embarrassed by his physique. And mind you, this was 10 years ago. And frankly, it just wasn't that great of a match back in 01. And then I saw this match on Thursday night, and well, that match no longer looks so bad. This was apparently heavily, heavily edited on Thursday night. And I thought it was just really, really sad watching these two in there together, more so Flair than Sting, because Sting's a guy who's, what, 53 years old? And of all the old guys in wrestling, of all the old guys in TNA, Sting is the one who actually looks pretty good. You know, he looks like a guy who actually might be a little bit younger than he actually is, and his physique, of course, is nothing like it used to be, but he's not embarrassing. Perhaps his gear hides a lot of that. He's tried to reinvent himself with this character, even though he's turned into a caricature of himself, and he's taken it way, way over the top. But I still appreciate the fact that he's trying to freshen himself up, and he still has a huge fan following. So I have a lot of respect for Sting, and Flair, not so much. I when he wrestles, and we're talking about Ric Flair now, and it happened in this match, his hair gets all frizzed out. He reminds me of E.G. Marshall in the movie Creepshow. And that's not a good thing. I know very few people will get that reference, but if you know what I'm talking about, it's just that's exactly what I thought of. They had this one shot of Flair during the match when maybe it was after a near fall or something. He was looking incredulously at the referee, and his hair was just out to here, and he just looked like Uncle Creepy in this match. Having said all of that, the reports that I had read, the spoilers in the days before the TV show aired on Thursday, described how atrocious this match was. And it may well have been, given the heavy editing that they had to do to it, but the finished product on TV, I thought, was largely fine for what it was. It was very, very sad, and it wasn't a good match, but, you know, it didn't offend me. It was the most, you know, I've certainly seen far worse matches. It was the most basic Ric Flair match that you've ever seen. You know, he appeared to suffer some sort of arm injury towards the end. It looked like it may have happened on the superplex spot towards the end of the match, and apparently now the report is that he suffered a bursa sac in his elbow. Flair commented to Mike Mooneyham of the Charleston Courier-Post, I believe it is, that he thought he broke his arm. I mean, he was in a lot of pain. He thought he broke his arm, and apparently there's some sort of sac in your elbow, and it basically just burst. And now he's got to watch because that can be prone to an infection. So now he's got that injury on top of a torn rotator cuff that he refuses to have surgery on because he feels that the surgery will keep him out for too long. And, of course, Flair has to make money. And he only makes money when he shows up. So that's kind of the situation with Ric Flair. When Sting nailed the Stinger Splash in the corner at the end of the match, you could tell something was wrong with Flair when he went down very awkwardly for the Flair flop. You know, it's as though he didn't want to land on the arm because he was in so much pain. And, you know, Ric Flair can go in there and do all of his Ric Flair signature spots. If Ric Flair can't even do the Flair flop, you know it's time to hang it up. Sting beat him with a Scorpion Deathlock in spite of interference by Immortal. There was one point where I think Sting had Flair covered and Immortal was supposed to run down. They were too late and the referee had to, like, hold up his count. It looked very fake. Hulk Hogan came down to the ring as well and all of this fracas that was going on. Now, mind you, unless I missed something, I don't think this match was no disqualification. You had all of Immortal run down, Ken Anderson ran down with the steel chair, and yet there was no disqualification called in this match, and they didn't think about this ahead of time. It's fine if you wanted to have interference, but why not add the no DQ stipulation in there? It's just little things like that that piss me off. Hogan came down, he handed a pair of brass knucks to Flair, which Flair used. It didn't work. As I said, Sting went on to win, and as a result, Sting gets his match with Hulk Hogan at Bound for Glory next month, the match that they have been building to literally since Hogan arrived in TNA at the beginning of 2010. And what I'm going to talk about now is a spoiler, so if you do not want to hear any TNA spoilers for the upcoming tapings, you better fast forward right now. For the Impact taping that took place, this is for the show that's going to air on September 29th. So it's not the next show, it's the show after that. Hulk Hogan came out in the final segment, and he said that he feels like he's had 1,000,000 pounds lifted off his shoulders, and he talked about how, you know, when he got into the business and Hiro Matsuda broke his leg and wrestling Andre the Giant and selling out Madison Square Garden and all of this stuff. And he said he had the chance of a lifetime when he came to Impact Wrestling with 3 decades of knowledge, he said, and the ability to change Impact Wrestling. Boy, has he changed Impact Wrestling, let me tell you. And Hogan said that he's been there for almost 2 years. Every moment has been worth it. Well, yeah, for him, maybe. He said, watching names like Bobby Roode and James Storm, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, and RVD step up. RVD? Really? RVD seems like the most unmotivated veteran I've ever seen in TNA when he's out there. So Hogan says that, unfortunately, it's the end of the road for him. He wanted to tell his fans first, even before he told his wife. He said he lost his family, he lost his health, but the fans have always stuck by him. He said that he's made the decision that his run in wrestling is over, and it's time for people like Bobby Roode, Storm Styles, and the rest to carry the company, and that he would make his final appearance with TNA next week from Knoxville. Of course, they haven't taped Impact yet from Knoxville. That's coming up in a couple of weeks. So apparently they're building that as Hulk Hogan's final wrestling appearance in the ring. Not wrestling, but just making an appearance. And this is interesting, to say the least, given the fact that they have been building this Sting match now, literally, as I said, since Hogan arrived in TNA. This is the big main event they've been promoting for Bound for Glory, or teasing. You know, until Sting beat Flair, it wasn't official. But even when Sting beat Flair, they said Sting gets his match with Hogan. So if Hogan is legit, and I've talked about how you can't believe a word out of people like Kurt Angle and Matt Hardy, and Hogan is right at the top of that list. Especially if it's on the actual TV show, you automatically have to assume it's part of the storyline. And I don't for a second believe that Hulk Hogan is done, or that he was being completely genuine in this promo. My gut reaction, coupled with the rumors that I've been hearing, leads me to believe that Hogan will be wrestling at Bound for Glory. Excuse me, I've heard that the singles match with Sting is actually not going to happen. The rumors I've been hearing suggest perhaps a tag team match, perhaps some sort of multi-man match of some kind. So it really does look like there will be no Hogan versus Sting match. Now, this is actually a really good thing. I think watching the match with Sting and Ric Flair on Impact Thursday night, Ric Flair can barely do anything in that ring. Okay, he is old. I mean, Ric Flair looked ancient in that match. And he's a couple of years older than Hogan, just by a few years. But if that's the match that Ric Flair gave us with Sting on Thursday night, Hulk Hogan can do less than that, okay? That's how bad Hulk Hogan, the shape that he is in physically, is even worse than Ric Flair. So if that's the match we got on Thursday, then I can only imagine the kind of match we'd get at Bound for Glory. So if Hogan can't go with Sting, that's actually a good thing. It just sucks for TNA because they were dumb enough to continue to promote this match. When Hogan had that last back surgery all those months ago, they should have decided at that point, you know what, he can't wrestle. And even if Hogan wants to wrestle, we're not going to bank our future for the rest of the year. We're not going to build our biggest pay-per-view of the year, the WrestleMania of TNA, around Hulk Hogan after he had his, what, 8th back surgery, can barely move. Let's be smart about this. And you know what, Hulk? Not for nothing, but you're not wrestling at Bound for Glory. Or even if you are going to wrestle at Bound for Glory, we're going to bump you down. You'll be a special attraction on the card. Instead, we'll promote something else as the main event. But no, TNA did not do that. TNA has continued with this storyline. They have continued to build this as their main event. And now, basically, they're going to be fucked by Hulk Hogan. Big surprise there. TNA getting fucked over by Hogan and or Bischoff. Who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk that something like that could possibly happen? So, if Hogan is going to do a match, and I still think he is, it's not going to be one-on-one against Sting, which means anything else will probably be better than that. But it's not what they've been promoting. You know, there are people out there, I'm sure, who are genuinely psyched out. They are amped up for a Sting-Hogan match. Those loyal TNA hardcores out there, those big Hogan fans and Sting fans who still pop for all the nostalgia, were probably looking forward to it, and now they're not going to get it. So it's bad enough that they're now not going to be able to deliver on what was supposed to be the main event for their biggest show of the year. Believe me, they would have been much better off promoting Kurt Angle versus Bobby Roode as the real main event. I'll tell you what, they may have to do that now. You know, that may be the match that you see the focus shift onto that as the really big true main event of Bound for Glory. With Rude winning the championship, to me, there can be no other outcome, especially with Kurt's problems recently. There's no reason to keep the belt on him. There just isn't. You know, to me, this is TNA's opportunity to replicate the real sports build to the Kurt Angle Samoa Joe cage match back in 2006, to do it with Kurt Angle and Bobby Roode. Okay, you could put together vignettes and all that. What I mean by real sports build, if nothing else, you don't even have to copy that feud exactly, or even the way they promoted The Rock and Brock Lesnar, okay, at SummerSlam back in 2002. It worked. It was very successful. It was different. It was fresh. And much like TNA, I'll knock WWE for the same thing, because they did a great job of building Rock versus Brock as this real, with this real sports build back in 2002, and they never did that again for any other match. And I just don't understand why. I really don't. Here's their chance to do that again with Kurt Angle and Bobby Roode. Here's their match, their opportunity to make that match feel special, to feel like something different, to promote Bobby Roode as the guy. He's been one of those TNA originals that has been there, if not from the beginning, certainly pretty close to the beginning. He's worked hard. He's busted his ass. He's been a great tag team wrestler. Now he's branched off into singles. This is his chance to really reach out and grab the brass ring to become the World Heavyweight Champion on what is TNA's biggest stage. And, you know, they can turn a negative into a positive. That's what TNA can do with this. Kurt Angle versus Bobby Roode is going to be a hell of a lot better than any match involving Sting and Hulk Hogan. And, quite frankly, guys like Bobby Roode and Storm and AJ, those are the guys that should be built up for the main event. Those are the guys you should be promoting. Not Hogan, not Flair, not Sting, not even Kurt Angle, to be honest with you. So this is their chance to really turn a negative into a positive, but it's just another example of Hulk Hogan not giving a shit about the company whose checks he's been cashing for the last 20 months. I talked about that last week. Hogan goes out, he does these interviews, he's doing these interviews now for his micro championship wrestling show, not a single mention about TNA in any of this. And Hogan and Bischoff's contracts are up. I've heard in October, I've heard in November, within the next 2 months, their contracts are up with TNA. And if Hogan really is done, if this is not a work, if this is a shoot, brother, then I guess this really is the end of Hogan and TNA, because what the hell else is there for him to do? You know, if they're not going to build him up for a match, he's just going to come out every week and play the same character every week. You know, 1 week he's in control, the next week the network is in control, the next week somebody else is in control. Who cares? Get rid of him. I said it last week. Five people TNA needs to get rid of. Hogan, Bischoff, Flair, Hardy, and Angle. Gone. Done. They had a great run. In some cases, they actually meant something to TNA. In other cases, they did nothing but just suck the blood from TNA. Their time is over. It's time to move on. Hogan is part of that. He's no different. Since I brought up micro championship wrestling, I was going to save that for the end. I may as well talk about that now. It's Hulk Hogan's new show, which premiered on True TV. That's the former Court TV channel, for those of you who are unaware. And the show premiered on Wednesday night, I believe it was. And I admit, I only caught the first 15 minutes of the show. I was planning on watching the whole thing. I thought it was a half an hour. And then I realized that it was an hour, and I immediately lost interest. And I got through 15 minutes of it, and then I tapped out and I said, I'm done. This is just not good. The show sucks. Maybe some of you listening actually liked it in a train wreck sort of way. But to me, I don't know what I was expecting when I put this show on. I know Spike TV had a show called Half Pint Brawlers. They used to promote that during TNA shows. And I think Eric Bischoff may have had a role in producing that. I never watched Half Pint Brawlers. I've heard good things about it. I don't know if it was actually any good or not. But I'm sure it was nothing like this show. I put this show on. I actually put it on a couple of minutes late. And I see, you know, they have the little people on the show, and I guess the basic premise is there's this guy, I guess he's the promoter, I don't know what his name is, he's a normal-sized fella, and he's promoting wrestling matches with the midgets, just call them midgets, that's what they are, I don't mean that in a negative way, and there's some issues, I guess, and he needs help from somebody, or else everything's going to fall apart, and he decides to call one of his best friends, he claims, in the entire world, Hulk Hogan. So he calls Hogan, and of course Hogan answers right away, and he explains the situation to Hogan and says, we need your help, and Hogan says, basically he's willing to help. This is what you got to do. I'll show up and do what I can to try to help you guys. And immediately, you know, you watch this, and it just feels fake. Everything about this show felt fake. But it wasn't until I saw a certain someone pop up on my television screen that I realized, my God, this show is... It's not even as though the show is shying away from the fact that it's fake. They call it reality TV and all that, but I'm watching the show, and there's a scene where this guy shows up. They call him Frat Boy Chris. And he's supposed... I don't know what role he played. He's supposed to have paid the midget wrestlers money, and he only paid them like half the money they were due, and then I guess he got beaten up by the midgets until he paid them the full amount or whatever. Anyway, Frat Boy Chris looked awfully familiar to me, and it only took me about 3 seconds before I realized who it was. Frat Boy Chris on this show is former Ring of Honor world champion, who is still in Ring of Honor, mind you, Roderick Strong. Played the role of Frat Boy Chris on this show. Now, it's one thing to have a reality show like the old Hogan Knows Best, okay? And it's even been admitted the show is scripted. All reality television is scripted. Don't let anybody tell you any differently, okay? It's all bullshit. There is nothing about it that is reality. Nothing. So anyway, this show is no different, but this show is so blatant about it. I've never seen a reality show where I knowingly, like, I'm watching it and it's so obvious that people are playing characters. It's almost like WWE. The guy showed up, they gave him a different name. Can't call him Roderick Strong because they don't own the name or something. Well, you'll be Frat Boy Chris on this show, and we'll pretend that, you know, you're the promoter or whatever the fuck his role was on this show. I couldn't watch it after this. I turned it off. I know Brian Knobbs apparently is on the show, and apparently there may have been a reference to Knobbs having sold out MSG or something. That would have put me over the edge. I would have just probably vomited all over the place. This show is no good. It's just unbearable. An hour of this. I mean, if it were half an hour, I guess it might possibly be bearable. But I got through 15 minutes, and I stopped. And if you lasted longer than that, then you are a better person than I am. So, yeah. I didn't watch the rest of the show, so this is only a partial review. But this show is no good, everybody. Don't bother with it. It's not going to last more than... a season anyway. I don't know how it did. The ratings did come out, and I don't think they were that great. And they're replaying it a bunch of times. I saw Hogan on Twitter a little bit earlier today, here on Sunday. I think he was saying that today at 6 o'clock in the evening, I think they're replaying it. I can't even sit here and say that it's worth it to check out at least once, unless you want to see the Roderick Strong scene. It's in the first 15 minutes or so. This show is so dumb. And again, Hogan's making the media rounds. He's all over the place. He's on big-time shows trying to get the show over and to promote it. He's promoting this, but he's not saying anything about TNA. I mean, if that doesn't tell you something about Hogan's priorities, then I don't know what does. I mean, this show makes an episode of Impact look like WrestleMania X7, for crying out loud. Speaking of Ring of Honor, that's a good segue there. They had their Death by Dishonor internet pay-per-view yesterday here in New York at the Manhattan Center, and you can check out the results online. I bring this up just because I wanted to mention here that starting next weekend, for those of you who may have forgotten or perhaps were not even aware, if you have a Sinclair TV station, a Sinclair affiliate in your area, and you can probably go on ROHWrestling.com, I think somewhere there they have a list. If you're unsure if you have a Sinclair station in your market, go on their website and check it out. The new Ring of Honor TV show will debut next weekend. It's actually debuting next Saturday, September 24th, so probably before I record the next sound off, ROH will re-debut on television. And this will be the first time back on TV since their deal ended with HDNet. And this is a little bit different. It's not as though they're debuting on a cable network and it's available nationally. It's Sinclair Broadcasting. It's kind of like the old, when SmackDown was on UPN. You know, if you had a UPN affiliate in your area, you could watch SmackDown. If you did not have a UPN affiliate, you could not watch SmackDown. So it's kind of similar with ROH, and they'll be clearing new markets hopefully in the future. And for those of you who do not live in a Sinclair market, so you can watch Ring of Honor on TV, they are going to stream the show for free on their website. So if you want to check out Ring of Honor, if you've never seen an ROH show before, I have. It's a great product, and I'll be the first to admit, I haven't been to a Ring of Honor show in a long-ass time. I haven't been following the product as closely as I used to, but I should be. They've got a great roster of talent, many of whom have since been recruited and probably will be recruited in the future by WWE. So when you see certain, even CM Punk was an alumni, former Ring of Honor world champion, and Punk's doing pretty well for himself in WWE right now. So Ring of Honor, if you've never checked it out, it's absolutely worth it. And this is the perfect opportunity to do so, because if you don't have a Sinclair station, all you got to do is go to ROHWrestling.com and stream the show. I'm curious to check it out to see how the production values are and all that. And they've got a lot of great talent. Jim Cornette is involved with TNA, so you know that there's some good minds behind the operation. There's going to be very few gaps in logic when it comes to the ROH product as compared to, well, really TNA or WWE, to be honest with you. So TV show debuts next Saturday. Check it out, and let me know what you think if you do. And one last great segue here. Claudio Castagnoli, a former Ring of Honor star, part of the Kings of Wrestling tag team with Chris Hero, has officially signed his deal with WWE. This has been in the works now for a few months. Both Claudio and Chris Hero were rumored to be jumping over to WWE. They were offered developmental deals. They were going through the process of all of the medical testing and psychological testing and all of that stuff, the impact testing, they call it, for concussions, the whole kit and caboodle. And apparently Hero is going to sign with WWE if he hasn't already done so. But Claudio just got his shit together first, so he's official. He's in. He's already down in FCW in the developmental program down there. They have given him a new name, which was to be expected. And he actually came out of this pretty good. His new name is Antonio Cesaro. That's Claudio's new name down in FCW. No word yet on what Chris Hero's new name might be, but his deal isn't quite done yet. He's still working on that. So he'll get a new name, too. And hopefully his new name is as good as Claudio. I actually think, Antonio Cesaro is a fine name. And certainly a lot better than Eli Cottonwood, Husky Harris, Percy Watson, or any of the other god-awful names they give people down there. I mean, every now and then there'll be a gem, somebody... I could just picture this. Like, I picture an entire locker room of like new recruits, and then Steve Kern like walks in and says, "All right, I got new names for everybody." And people, it's like the draft. This must have been what it was like to be drafted back during Vietnam, when you like you didn't know if your number was going to be called, and you're probably sitting at home watching on TV, sweating bullets. I just have this image in my head that it's kind of the same way down in FCW, and they kind of spit these new names out, and one guy gets a really crappy name, and he's all deflated, and then. You know, there's Claudio getting the name Antonio Cesaro, and he's probably doing cartwheels in that locker room. It could have been a hell of a lot worse for him. So look forward to seeing him on TV. I hope they keep him and Hero together. I've heard that WWE is trying to revitalize their tag team division. And to me, if you've got both guys under contract and you're trying to revitalize your tag team division and you don't bring them up as a tag team, then I don't know what teams that they're going to bring up. These guys... have been one of the best tag teams in wrestling now for a couple of years. And I think bringing them up together as a team, they work so well together. They've got great chemistry. They can have great matches. Eventually, you can break them off into singles. They can both become very big single stars in WWE. And in particular, I think for Chris Hero, the potential for him is just limitless. So I've got high hopes for both these guys. But Claudio is officially in, and Hero hopefully will follow suit very soon. Before I get to the mailbag, I got an email from one of our listeners, Matt, who had a very interesting suggestion, and I wanted to run it by everybody listening. This is for a potential new feature here on the Sound Off. Matt says, "Would you ever consider devoting a few minutes of a Sound Off episode to dissecting some of our favorite past matches? We could submit requests for matches, and you could tell us stuff that we might not know about them. I would also love to hear you give brief overviews of classic matches, followed by your personal rating." So there you go. It's an interesting concept. I'm not against the idea of doing it, even if it wasn't every week. I mean, it could be every week, maybe just every other episode or something. So if you think that's a fine idea and you'd like to hear that, I would like to hear from you. So send me an email at thesolomonster@gmail.com or post on Facebook, get a thread going maybe. And if we get enough support for the idea, then perhaps I will start doing it, and we'll pick our first match for me to go back and review. So let me know your thoughts on that. Somebody else also pitched the idea of a sound-off t-shirt, which I thought was kind of interesting. So that's another idea. It could very well become a reality if there's enough support for it. If you think that might be something you'd be interested in purchasing for a reasonable price, let me know. It's time to dig into the mailbag. Got some good questions from you guys this week. As always, if you have questions, email them to me directly at thesolomonster@gmail.com. And again, I cannot emphasize this enough. I keep getting some questions When I go into the main SC Scoops account to check out questions for the main page mailbag, which is separate from this one, I see people emailing me for the sound off. I could very easily miss those emails. So if you have something addressed to me specifically, email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. And if you have something, a question or a shout out or whatever, if I have a chance to read it on the air, email is the best way to do that. Don't private message me on Facebook if it's something that you hope to get on the air, because it probably won't happen. So I just wanted to mention that. Lewis wrote in, I mentioned the UFC on Fox card coming up on November 12th, their big debut on network television. And I mentioned that the only fight on that show is a heavyweight championship fight between Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos. And Lewis wrote in to mention there is another fight on that night, which I was aware of, Clay Guida against Dan Henderson. And as I mentioned to Lewis, it will only air if time permits. That's kind of why I didn't mention it. If the title fight goes five rounds, then Guida versus Henderson, at least in full, is not likely to air. But if the fight ends, for example, on a knockout in the first or second round, then yes, we probably will be seeing that fight on television. Kieran from Sheffield, England writes in, Dear Solemonster, love the work, love the sound off. Great job. Just wanted to ask your opinion on Sheamus and his face turn and how you think it's going so far. Things like how he would be overcoming two-on-one attacks and laying out both men and such. I think it's a fresh thing, his turn, that is. And it's working really well for him. He's coming over strongly in the ring, and he's actually quite funny on the microphone. He's gone from being lost in the shuffle to people taking notice of him once again. And I happen to agree. I think that they've actually done a great job so far with Sheamus as babyface. The fans have seemed to really take to him. And, you know, given that Christian now has nothing to do, and I don't know if they have something planned for Christian. Again, Edge has been advertised for an appearance at Hell in a Cell. And maybe there's some angle where Christian feuds with somebody else and Edge is involved somehow. But Christian right now has nothing to do. He's become just another guy, which is pretty much what I figured would happen when his feud with Orton ended. And Sheamus needs a good opponent. And quite frankly, I think the two of them would work really well together. And Sheamus can only get better working with a guy like Christian. So I'd be completely in favor of a Christian-Sheamus feud. Rory wrote into the sound off. He is a member of the Triple Threat. He is attending Night of Champions in Buffalo tonight. It will be his first wrestling pay-per-view. He got the tickets as a graduation gift, so I wanted to give him a shout-out. Hopefully Rory has a good time. You'll have a good time tonight. Even, you know, for people watching at home on pay-per-view, it could be hit or miss. Tonight's show could be really, really good, or it could be really, really shitty. But more often than not, like, 9 times out of 10, if you're going to go to a WWE show live, especially a pay-per-view, to be there live, you're going to have a good time. Just like Survivor Series, you know. I'm not a fan of Rock and Cena being on the same team, but the fact that I'm going to be there live in the building to witness all the mayhem and to witness Rock's first match in 8 years, it's a really cool thing. I've been to some really good pay-per-views before, and conversely, I was at the one and only Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view, which I have the distinct honor of being able to say that I was, in fact, at the first and only one, and it really was not a great show, but there were 2 title changes on the show, and being there live was a fun time. You'll have a good time tonight. Gary from Singapore writes in, I was wondering, what are your personal top 3 favorite ring names, and what would your ring name be if you were a wrestler? Well, I would guess my ring name would be Solemonster. I mean, I can't think of a cooler name than that. Although I'm sure they would send me down to developmental and give me some completely bogus name, like Henry Zinkler or some BS like that, because some dipshit writer was a Happy Days fan. Anyway, as far as my favorite top 3 ring names, you know, Big Daddy Cool Diesel, I always thought had a pretty cool ring to it. I mean, how could it not? It had the word cool right there in the name, for crying out loud. Bret the Hitman Hart is another one. Stone Cold Steve Austin's another cool name that kind of rolls off the tongue very nicely. Big Van Vader, before they dropped the Big Van, I think, due to a lawsuit that I think New Japan threatened at the time. That's why he stopped being called Big Van Vader and just became Vader. But I always thought that was a really cool name. So those were a couple off the top of my head. I'm sure if I gave it some thought, I could probably come up with a top 10. Nissim writes into the show. He wanted to know my favorite Mick Foley character. Was it Mankind, Dude Love, or Cactus Jack, or the real Mick Foley? Of course, remember at WrestleMania 2000 when Foley unretired a month after retiring in that Fatal 4-Way, he was just Mick Foley. That was the same match where he missed the big elbow off the ring apron. But which was my favorite Foley character? Had to be Mankind. I mean, beyond those 3, I don't believe he played any other characters during his career. I was always a huge Mankind fan. Even before Mankind went soft and got Mr. Sacco and all that, I was a huge Mankind fan. And as far as his best match, Foley's best match, his greatest match, as I said to Nissim here in my email response, was against Shawn Michaels at Mind Games in September 1996. If I had to pick a couple of others, his championship match as Dude Love against Steve Austin at Over the Edge 1998 is another one. That was the match where Vince McMahon was the guest referee. His 2000 Royal Rumble street fight at MSG with Triple H is probably, if it's not number one, it's probably number two behind the Shawn Michaels match, I would say. And his match with Randy Orton at Backlash 2004, Foley, I think, has said it's one of his all-time favorites, if not his favorite. And Orton talks, I think even on his new DVD, I'm sure Orton must cover that match, because I know it was one of his favorites that really helped put him on the map. And as far as Foley's greatest feud, which Nissim also asked about here in his email, he had classic battles with The Rock and with Triple H, but I'm going to go with Undertaker. You know, that feud with Undertaker and Mankind really established him as a headliner in WWE, because not many people got victories over The Undertaker back then like he did. I mean, their very first match at the King of the Ring in 1996, it was a straight singles match, and I believe Paul Bearer interfered. He accidentally clocked Undertaker with the urn, if I remember correctly. I could be messing. Maybe it was Mankind who grabbed it, but I think Paul Bearer nailed him inadvertently, but he pinned him. You know, it was as clean a victory over The Undertaker as I had ever seen at that point. And then at the Boiler Room Brawl 2 months later, again, granted, Paul Bearer did turn on The Undertaker, but he beat him again. So that's two victories in a row over The Undertaker. And that right there established him as a main event level threat. In fact, it was the month after that Boiler Room Brawl that he got the title match with Shawn Michaels and shocked the world. I don't think anybody expected him to go in there and have as good of a championship match as he did with Shawn. But that styles clash between the two of them worked. You know, Michaels was more of a finesse kind of guy, high-flying moves and acrobatics and all that. And Foley was a brawler. You know, he was not a great wrestler, although he did, you know, as a wrestler, he held his own. I don't know that he gets enough credit, but it wasn't like people expected him to go in there and have a clinic with Shawn Michaels. But he incorporated elements of his arsenal with what Shawn had to offer, and they had a tremendous match with a shitty finish. But his greatest feud is and always will be with The Undertaker. You know, end of story. It was just a brutal, brutal rivalry. Of course, I don't have to tell you about their Hell in a Cell match. And, if I'm making a short list of people that I could see WWE going with for Undertaker's final opponent, if, let's say, he's going to go 20-0 and call it quits at WrestleMania next year, you got to put Mick Foley on that list. I'm not saying I would go with Foley. In fact, I would not go with Foley, because Foley is one of those guys. He may not be as old as Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair, but his body, he's got the body of a Ric Flair in terms of age. He is physically as broken down as can be. And I don't know that even Undertaker, who himself is broken down, could even salvage that. And I think Undertaker's at a point in his career where he really likes going to WrestleMania and having the best match on the show. He's done it for the last 3 years, as far as I'm concerned. And I think if next year is going to be it for him, he'd want to go out on a high note. And all due respect to Mick Foley, who probably is on his way back to WWE, I don't know that putting him in a match with Undertaker at WrestleMania necessarily is the best idea. But as far as his greatest feud, Undertaker, easily, hands down. Ant writes in, he is a religious solomaniac, he says. Let's not bring religion into it now. He looks back fondly on the Survivor Series in 1992. However, what was the reasoning behind moving away from the traditional team elimination format that year? It was just a matter, I think, of the pay-per-view had not been doing as well, perhaps, as, let's say, SummerSlam or Royal Rumble. And they wanted to freshen it up and do something a little bit different. They wanted to get away from doing just the elimination matches. They did have one Survivor Series elimination match. It may have only been 3-on-3. I don't even know if it was the traditional 4-on-4. But the rest of the card was pretty much, I think, tag and singles matches. You know, you had Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels in the main event. You had Mr. Perfect making his in-ring comeback for the first time since the summer of 91, teaming with Randy Savage against Ric Flair and Razor Ramon. You had the Nightstick match with Big Boss Man and Nails, which was kind of funny. I actually saw Survivor Series 92 within the last year and a half. And, you know, in promoting that match, which I guess at the time it was kind of brutal, but they were building up the brutality of that Nightstick match and how parental discretion is advised. And, you know, I watched it, and it really wasn't any more brutal than any match you'd see these days. And these days, the matches even pale in comparison to like 10 or 12 years ago. So it's kind of funny to go back and watch this thing from 1992 and they're talking about how brutal it's going to be, and it really wasn't. Undertaker and Kamala had a casket match, which may have been the first ever casket match on television in WWE at that show. And a couple of other bouts as well. So I think Yokozuna actually maybe made his pay-per-view debut. He had a match with Virgil on that show. I also look back on Survivor Series 92 with some fondness, which is ironic because at the time, I was pretty pissed off that they had gone away from the traditional elimination format. You know, unlike today where I just don't think you can do an entire pay-per-view of nothing but Survivor Series matches and have that show do any good, back then, it was tradition. You know, there had only been a couple of other Survivor Series. It was always about elimination matches. It was the, you know, it was the identity for that show. It was the whole Survivor Series gimmick. It would be like doing a Royal Rumble without a 30-man Rumble match. And at the time, I was none too happy about it. But I look back on it now, and you know, more so, I think, because of that main event. Seeing Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels in a Survivor Series main event in 1992, when you still had all these other main event guys, and it was still the era of the big man, and, you know, they were under a microscope at the time. They were in a lot of trouble. You know, Vince McMahon's trial on steroid distribution and all that was a few more years away, but they were trying to get away from the bigger physiques and all that at that point. They were really trying to crack down. That's the only reason that you saw Bret vs. Shawn in the main event that year. Originally, it was just going to be an undercard match for the Intercontinental belt, and it turned out to be champion against champion for the WWF title. Who would have thunk it? A couple of weeks before that show, Ultimate Warrior and British Bulldog were both fired. There was a lot going on back then in the WWF behind the scenes, and maybe it's just because of the main event, but I look back fondly on that show, too. But I am happy that the next year they did return to the traditional Survivor Series format. Curtis in Chicago wrote in. He, I guess, heard last week we had a listener write in talking about what it was like being in the building in Chicago for Money in the Bank in July. And Curtis was there as well. He has his own account. He was in the building in Chicago in the nosebleed section. He says that the Rosemont / Allstate Arena, which is what it's called now. It's not called the Rosemont / Allstate. It's now the Allstate Arena. It used to be the Rosemont Horizon. And he says, it may be the best arena I have ever been to for a pro wrestling event. There is not a bad seat in the house, as I was in the upper deck and was able to watch the entire event without ever having to catch the action on the stadium trons or monitors. With that being said, the ovation was ridiculous, deafening, inspiring, sustaining, and none of us sat down the whole night. I honestly felt sorry for any Cena fans in the building. I've even watched it on DVD since, and turning up the volume on surround sound speakers could not do this moment justice. I took my coworker with me, and although he likes the WWE, he had never been to a live event. He probably got spoiled coming to Money in the Bank, but he was blown away by the ovation for Punk, the pageantry, and the love for him that night. And the ovation at the end of the night when he ran off with the belt, with many in the crowd yelling, "Run, motherfucker, run!" was priceless. Keep up the good work, and let it be known John Cena will never improve. I watched WrestleMania 22, where he was booed as well, and if he hasn't improved by now, we need to stop blaming WWE booking and writers and state it point blank that John Cena is garbage, he says. How about that? That's from Curtis in Chicago, a first-hand account of what it was like to be in the building at Money in the Bank, which, again, is one of those shows that I really regret not being at. Knowing now what I know, I would have made the attempt to fly to Chicago to be at that show. I mean, it was one of the best WWE pay-per-view events, top to bottom, of all time. It wasn't just the main event, but that main event would have put it over the top for me. I would have loved to have been in the building that night. Adrian from the Trinidad West Indies writes in, when Kane had his feud with MVP during 2006, they had an Inferno match at Armageddon. Unfortunately, MVP got first-degree burns. Did WWE get in any kind of trouble for this incident? And is the Inferno match then banished? I don't think WWE got in any kind of trouble. As far as whether or not the Inferno match is banished, I don't think anything is banished except the pile driver. But I don't think it's banished. I just think that, first of all, they've gotten away from the more dangerous matches in recent years. That's why there's things you just don't see. You don't see thumbtacks in matches and barbed wire and blood and all that. And I think the Inferno match kind of falls under that same category. It's a very, very dangerous match. A lot of things can go wrong, as happened with MVP. You're going to get burned. And also, it's not just that, but you know, in the absence of Kane and The Undertaker, there's really no reason to have an Inferno match. It's kind of like the casket match, you know, or the Buried Alive match. It fits in with The Undertaker's gimmick, but is there really a reason to have a match like that if Undertaker, for example, is not involved? Or Kane, and the Inferno match was the brainchild of Vince Russo, who came up with it when Undertaker and Kane were feuding, so in that context, it kind of made sense. Without either one of them involved, is there really a reason to have an Inferno match? I mean, I don't understand what the point would be. You're putting guys in jeopardy, and you're putting them in danger for no good reason. Plus, just imagine what it must be like to wrestle in an Inferno match. I mean, those are hot flames, okay? This is not fake fire we're talking about here. These are real flames that are surrounding the ring, and it's probably hard enough wrestling a match that goes any length of time, 10-minute match, 15, 20-minute match. Just imagine doing that with flames that perhaps are reaching temperatures of 100 degrees or more surrounding the ring. It cannot be a fun thing to do. So I think if there were a storyline reason for it, we could very well see an Inferno match again at some point. I would not hold my breath, though, on seeing one anytime soon. Liam writes in with a very interesting, if not creative, concept here. He's been a listener since episode 117. Dear Solid Monster, what would you say to temporarily reviving the British Empire using WWE superstars to run amok in the company? Once Sheamus has had his run as a babyface, we can collect the wrestlers we have from Britain and bring them together to form a group that's sort of like the British Empire. Obviously, Sheamus is from the Republic of Ireland and technically was never part of Britain, but we can just rely on the ignorance of viewers to get past that. Well, WWE does that all the time. Drew McIntyre is from Scotland, Wade Barrett and William Regal from England, Mason Ryan from Wales. Oh, you lost me there. You lost me at Mason Ryan. Anyway, he says, because William Regal is the old hand and the veteran, he could be made the leader. Which is interesting you say that, because Regal has been campaigning on Twitter to get a championship match. I think Raw may be coming to the UK soon. And Regal apparently is ready to make a full-time comeback to wrestling. I guess doing the announcing he's been doing and having not really wrestled all that much for many, many months, he has healed up any old injuries, and he wants to have one last run. So this could fit right in with your idea. Anyway, he says they would destroy things on a regular basis and dominate until a group of American Patriot superstars band together. John Cena, Jack Swagger, and so on, to bring them down at a very lucrative pay-per-view. If they can't get a pay-per-view close or on the 4th of July, you can do something else. The basic concept is to relive the War of Independence. I think it could draw some money, and it gives off a sense of American pride so everyone wins. And considering that a lot of Canada was aligned with Britain during that war, some of Canada's own could come to the aid of the British. It would all culminate in a huge battle in which the USA ultimately comes out on top, just like in the War of Independence. What do you think about this idea? This is from our jolly old Englishman, Liam. And I will say this, if nothing else, he seems to have put a lot of thought into this idea, and you've probably put a lot more thought into this idea than most people working for WWE or TNA put into their own ideas, so I salute you for that. I don't think that this idea would work as you describe it. I think that there is the chance to do an angle similar to the USA versus Canada in 1997, but that thing worked, I think, in large part. It worked. It was a different era. It was a different time in wrestling. But the Hart Foundation was the dominant faction in WWE. Bret Hart was the world champion. Owen Hart was in the company for many years. He became the Intercontinental Champion. The British Bulldog was a former headliner at one point. He was in there. You know, Brian Pillman and all that. It was a very strong faction that, with the exception perhaps of Jim Neidhart, you can make the argument that all of those guys either were or could have been main event stars at one. Really, they all were, I think, maybe except Pillman. But, you know, Owen was headlining pay-per-views in 94 with Bret. Bulldog had main evented some pay-per-views in 95 that, you know, did very poorly. But you're talking about putting a group together that involves people like Mason Ryan and Drew McIntyre, who has been just absolutely beaten into the ground by WWE. He's got a good look, he's got talent, but WWE looks at him as a jobber, and they treat him like that. I mean, he lost to Zack Ryder in a dark match on Monday night. It's going to take a lot of rehabilitation to get Drew McIntyre back to a position where people could have any sort of respect for him. And it's WWE's own fault. So the names you mentioned would work, you know, given their backgrounds and the country they were born in and where they came from. But WWE has done such a piss-poor job of putting these guys over and making them feel special that I don't think putting them together in a faction, even if you had Sheamus in there, is going to mean a damn thing to anybody. I don't think it's going to make people want to buy a pay-per-view. Just out of pure American pride. You talked about perhaps John Cena and Jack Swagger because, you know, Swagger's the all-American American. Swagger's another guy that has been beaten into the ground. He means below nothing. And it's not even his fault. It's WWE's fault. Now all of a sudden Swagger is in this feud with Dolph. And you know, Vicky is in the middle of it and everything. It's just a mid-card feud, but they're trying to make Swagger mean something. They had two people tap out to his ankle lock on Raw 2 weeks ago in the main event. It means nothing because they have absolutely no intention of pushing him beyond a certain level. To them, Swagger had a chance. He failed to deliver. So it's not their fault. It's the talent's fault. He had the chance. We gave him the ball. He dropped it. So now he's back down in main event, or rather, he's back down in mid-card hell. That's how WWE operates. So this faction that you've outlined here, you know, you seem to have done your research, and they come from different parts of England and Ireland, and it doesn't mean anything. You know, it would be basically a collection of job guys. It would be like Nexus 3.0, especially with Mason Ryan in there. It's just these guys are not as strong. Like the Hart Foundation, there's no comparison. You can't compare them to a group of guys like this. Nobody's going to give a shit about these guys. This is not going to result in any sort of lucrative pay-per-view payoff. You need stronger guys than this. And I don't know who you get. You know, I haven't gone through the developmental roster to see who else is from overseas or anything like that. But it's certainly nobody that anybody really cares about. And I'll give you one other reason why this would never work. John Cena. You're expecting and banking on the fact that because John Cena is representing the good old U.S. of A., that people are going to be on his side, they're going to want to see him win, and as you say in your email here, they're going to chant USA, USA. And maybe they will. You know, maybe they will chant USA, USA. But I think people's hatred for John Cena will trump their patriotism. I really do. I think that people hate John Cena so much that they would actually boo him, even if it meant booing their own country. So for that reason alone, I don't think this would work. I think you got to put somebody else in there. With a different set of people, this could very well work. Unfortunately, in 2011, with the people that you mentioned here, I really don't think this idea would work. But, you put a lot of thought into it. It's a very creative idea. And I give you many props for that. But in modern-day WWE, I just don't see it working. AJ writes in. He is a fairly new listener to the Sound Off, but has gone back and listened to pretty much every episode available. Great work. Also a follower on Facebook. Well, you got to get going on that. You're not even double trouble, let alone triple threat. You got to get on Twitter and iTunes, and then it's a party. His question is, there was a Sound Off about wrestlers having supernatural powers, such as Undertaker and Kane. Who was the wrestler in the early 2000s that was dressed in all white that WWE ran vignettes for and had a brief run that was supposed to have supernatural powers? He didn't have a very long run. Who was this wrestler who played him? Whatever happened to him? I remember he seemed to have an okay look. He didn't light my world on fire, as you would say, but I thought they were setting him up as an anti-Undertaker type character, and then, as WWE often does, just sort of scrapped the idea. And this man just went away. And I'm pretty sure the person you are referring to is Mordecai, who was played by Kevin Thorne, who actually did have another run. Years later in WWE, they brought him back on TV as part of the ECW brand when ECW was on Sci-Fi. You remember Kevin Thorne was playing this vampire character. He had Ariel was his manager, played by Shelley Martinez. And he was on TV for a couple of months and seemed like they were trying to give him a push, and then they got rid of him again, and he hasn't been back. I don't know what he's doing these days. I believe he's still wrestling independently. But yeah, when he came in as Mordecai, they had high hopes for him. The plan was to ultimately put him in a feud with The Undertaker. That's what they were building him for. And things just did not work out. I remember he had a match with Hardcore Holly, and that's actually the only, I can't even call it a big match, but that's really the only match of his I can really remember. I don't remember him facing anybody else. I'm sure he must have. But his run was very, very brief, and for whatever the reason was, they scrapped the entire idea, and that was the end of Mordecai. So I'm pretty sure he was the one you're referring to. He was dressed in all white. He had, like, a long staff. Yeah. That's it for the mailbag this week. If you have questions, comments, anything like that, again, the best way to reach me and possibly get it read on the air is by email, thesolemonster, all one word, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, @solemonster. And you can also friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/thesolemonster. Again, all one word. We always have some very interesting, lively discussion and debate going on in the Raw thread every Monday night. And some really good people there, some really good stuff. So you got to friend me on there to become part of that. And, of course, so we also, by the way, have a fan page, which is kind of separate from the actual profile page. There is a Solemonster Sounds Off fan page on Facebook. If you type in Solemonster Sounds Off, and if you would be so kind as to like that page, I would very much appreciate that. I do hope to put some original content on there soon. I know it's just kind of been a place where I put a link to a new show every time it goes up, but hopefully we'll have more on there soon. So go find that page, if you will, and like it. And you can subscribe in iTunes to this very podcast. Type in Solemonster Sounds Off. It's completely free. It does not cost you anything. And you can subscribe whenever a new episode is posted, or if there's a vintage Sound Off, which goes up every now and then, perhaps on a weekday. And if you don't visit SE Scoops every waking minute of every day, you may not be aware of it. Well, if you are subscribed in iTunes, you do not have anything to worry about. It will automatically be downloaded for you, so you are always connected to the Sound Off and never miss a new episode, or an old episode, as it were. We'll be back next weekend with the 180th installment of the Solemonster Sounds Off as we continue on the march to 200. And it's all thanks to you guys. Thanks for your support. Keep spreading the good word. Until next time, be well, stay safe. We'll see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.